at Central Time. I'm Rob Farage. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up on Central Time, the pandemic has hit both farmers and food workers in unique ways. We'll talk to a farmer who says the two groups should work together to organize for changes in their industry. First, Keely Boltina joins us now because we're in our fall membership drive. Your support is the foundation of funding for Wisconsin public radio programs. In fact, it's the largest piece. It's what makes the Ideas Network your go-to place for great discussions. We're here to encourage you now to make your gift in support of the programs you count on at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Yeah. Hey, Rob. Thanks so much for having me here. It's great
to have
you.
Yeah. Hi.
Yeah. Hey. You know, we are looking for 15 gifts. That is our goal for this hour of Central Time.
You can help pay for the programs you count on each and every day when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You are powerful because people who listen, you provide the most significant share of funding for WPR programs. Your donation is an investment in Wisconsin Public Radio and in the programs that deliver the greatest value to you.
Your gift keeps independent public service radio on the air for you and for your entire community. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we have some exciting stuff to talk about here because we can now tell you that you have an opportunity to enjoy the first ever WPR puzzle. You can piece together Wisconsin symbols in the night sky. We've got our state bird, the robin, or the state tree, the sugar maple. So you can ask for a WPR puzzle with your gift of $12 a month or more. You can do that at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552.
There's a good chance you have a strong sense of, being a Wisconsin person, whether you live here right now or maybe you used to live here, or you just feel some kind of, spiritual connection with us. There's a good chance that part of that Wisconsin identity is connected to Wisconsin Public Radio. We play an important role in that sense of Wisconsin community, in part because we serve the entire state.
Well, on Wisconsin Public Radio, you get news, you get voices, music, sounds from all over the state. And over time, all of these broadcasts add up to a strong sense of connection to this state that we call home.
Wisconsin Public Radio, it is a home that we all share. It's funded in large part by listeners like you. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Supporting Wisconsin Public Radio right now is a great thing to do with just a few minutes of your time. Really, it's really simple. All we need is your name, contact information, how much you want to give, and how you want to pay.
A few minutes plus your gift to support the stories and programs that keep you connected to the world. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
When 15 people support WPR programs in the next hour, we meet our goal. WPR is listener supported. That's why your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is so important.
In addition to funding the programs, here's a little something extra. Your donation now enters you into a drawing for a Wheel and Sprocket gift card. If you win it, you'll have $1,000 to spend on bikes or cycling gear for your next outdoor adventure. Sustainers, if you're already making ongoing monthly gifts, good news, you're already automatically entered or bicycle-matically entered. If you're not a sustainer yet, sign up now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And gosh, that sustaining membership is just an amazing deal because you just set it up and you're still in control because you can change it anytime, but it just happens. You never have to remember to write the check or to send the electronic payment or anything like that. It just happens. And then when you're ready to offer a little more or if you need to cut back, that's still within your reach. Now, if you're a sustaining member already, you know how easy and simple this is to support WPR. Thank you for those ongoing monthly gifts. Make today the day you increase your support of WPR, maybe just by $5 or $10 a month, whatever amount you choose, whatever works out for you right now. Do that at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Ted in Oostburg says, I really look forward to Central Time each day. It gives me a much needed lift in my afternoons. And Chuck in Osseo says, Central Time covers it all from hard hitting issues to humor to great cooking. Ted, Chuck, thank you so much for listening. Thanks for giving. Now, how about you? Make your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Your gift right now is so important. And thank you so much for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Central Time. The COVID-19 pandemic has taken a toll on workers in a lot of industries, including farming and food production. The early weeks of the outbreak made a tough financial situation for farmers even worse, and food processing plants have had an outsized number of illnesses and deaths. Our next guest says it's time for a change in the balance of power in the agriculture industry, and that helping farmers and laborers organize is the way to make that happen. She says Wisconsin's own history can provide a good blueprint. Sarah Lloyd farms with her husband at the 400-cow Nelson Dairy Farm near Wisconsin Dells. She has served on the National Dairy Board, the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board, and is a member of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. Her recent piece in The Progressive is called Rebuild Farmer Labor Solidarity. Sarah, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Sarah, first let's talk about how COVID has affected these two crucial parts of the food industry, starting with farmers. We know a tough time, especially with milk prices, other commodity prices. How did COVID make things in many ways even worse for many farmers?
Yeah, so at the end of 2019, as a dairy farmer, we thought there was a little bit of relief from the low prices, but COVID hit, and as many people know, it really disrupted all the supply chain. So when all the restaurants shut down, institutions, all of that cheese and dairy that was going into those channels just were shut off. And so prices went way down again. And we really saw how brittle the food system is right now with the impacts of the economic shutdown from COVID. And then at the same time, you know, workers have just been really made unsafe in the workplace, the processing workers, especially the meatpacking workers. As a dairy farmer, I not only sell dairy products off my farm, I also sell beef from my farm. And so, you know, that impacts me when the meat processors go down. There's estimated as of today over 254 workers in the processing and farm worker have died from COVID. So this is very serious.
How do you see an opportunity to build connections between farmers and laborers?
Well, I think that, you know, what we have in the food system is that there's really strong monopoly power and corporate dominance. And they like to tell the story that somehow we should be, as farmers, divided from the workers and divided from the consumers, because if we got together, we would have a lot of power. And so I think that, you know, work that's being done, the Wisconsin Farmers Union is working together with a number of groups in the region, including some of the labor unions, to really come together and demand both fair prices for farmers, but also fair wages for workers and safety. Safety for the workers. We must be able to protect the workers that are so critical for the whole food system. And a lot of those people are immigrant workers. And so they are especially vulnerable, and we need to make sure that we're protecting them.
In your piece, you look to Wisconsin history for inspiration of cooperation between farmers and workers. What did you look back at?
Well, I was staying late at the Wisconsin Farmers Union office in Chippewa Falls, and the Farmers Union started in Wisconsin in the 30s, and there's big file cabinets of old photos, and I was leafing through, and I found this really spectacular photo from the Chippewa County Farmers Union Juniors Club, and they had a state fair booth that year in 1940. And they were calling for farmer labor cooperation and reciprocal protection. And I was really excited by that. They were asking that both farmers and workers get their fair share of the national income. And I think that they laid a good base for us. You know, if you think about the 1940s, the economy was being rebuilt after the great crash at the end of the 20s and all through the New Deal. And we're in that situation again. Our economy has been devastated by COVID. So let's look back to the Chippewa County Junior Farmer Union member, Farmers Union chapter, and let's take a lesson and come together.
We're talking to dairy farmer Sarah Lloyd right now about her recent piece in The Progressive calling to rebuild farmer labor solidarity. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you in the agriculture industry yourself as a farmer or working in food processing? If you're a farmer, do you feel a connection to workers in the next step in the chain, maybe the cheese plant or the meatpacking facility? If you work elsewhere in the supply chain, do you see common interests with farmers? How has the COVID pandemic affected your health risks, your economic risks along the way? Are there changes you think need to be made? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We pick up our conversation with Sarah Lloyd, dairy farmer and author of the recent piece in The Progressive, Rebuild Farmer Labor Solidarity. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of this idea of labor organizations bringing together farmers and food industry workers? If you are a farmer yourself or in a work in a meatpacking plant or other food processing facility, what kind of changes have you seen amid COVID? Do you think enough has been done to address health risks? Are you feeling economic damage during the pandemic? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Sarah, one concern consumers might have is, well, if farmers and food processing workers are making more money, does that mean food is going to cost me more? What would you say to that concern?
I would say, no, it doesn't have to be that way. I think that is the line that we're given by the corporate powers that be to separate us. If you look at the consumer dollar spent on food, the farmer's only getting 15 cents of that on average. There is plenty of money in the marketplace where if the supply chain, the processors, distributors, retailers, if we all shared equally and had fairness in that supply chain, you wouldn't necessarily see a big bump in consumer prices. Because as a farmer, I really want to make sure that people have access to good, healthy food. But also, let's talk about, you know, worker wages. Those are the consumers. Let's make sure that people are getting a good wage so that they can afford to buy my dairy products.
One big issue is, and you've touched on it briefly already, consolidation of ownership in the food processing realm in particular, with fewer companies owning bigger facilities, bigger shares of the market. Are there changes you'd like to see in that, and how would you want those changes to be made?
Well, there's a couple things. When you think about the big giant monopolist actors, it's the Tysons and Cargills and JBS and Smithfields. We've all heard those names, and they have an undue power in the industry. So we need to make sure that our Department of Justice at the federal and the state level is using the laws that it has to make sure that the monopoly power is being controlled. That's a fundamental part of the United States. We don't like monopolies. We also need to rebuild the small and medium scale processing infrastructure. We've lost a lot of meat plants. You know, if you talk to a farmer today, they might be waiting a year to get an appointment with a local meat processor to even just get the cow that they might want processed for their family. And, you know, that's where I would say, hey, Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, hey, you know, DATCAP, let's get moving on rebuilding that system for local processing.
Now, over in Minnesota, there's this thing called the Minnesota Democratic Farmer Labor Party. Do you feel like the two-party system has overlooked the needs of farmers and workers in food fields?
Well, I don't know if it's the two-party. I have a lot of thoughts about what the two-party system does, but I do think that, you know, the corporate dominance in the economy, which both parties don't seem to be effectively breaking up. They are trying to divide us. They're trying to divide the farmer, the worker, the consumer. We have Wisconsin Farmers Union has a pledge that people can sign on to as farmers and stating their solidarity for an equitable food system that protects the workers, that creates a fair price. So I really, you know, one thing that we can all do is show that we care and we understand. WisconsinFarmersUnion.com has this pledge that people can sign on to and sign on in solidarity.
On a practical level, if you want this cooperation between farmers and food processing workers, the farmers, they're working in their fields. They can be kind of isolated farm workers or food processing workers off in their own factories. On a practical level, do you see places and ways to bring the two groups together?
Well, you know, that's why I'm a member of Wisconsin Farmers Union. That's why, you know, workers should be able to freely organize and be in a union, so that's what you do. You work in an organization so that people that represent you can make sure that we're finding ways to connect, because yeah, everyone's busy. We also need to go back and do that hard work of getting to know each other again, because you're right, you know, what is the opportunity that a farmer has to meet with a meatpacking worker? So, you know, I definitely think we should look for opportunities. Certainly we have to be careful of COVID right now. But, you know, maybe there's ways of setting up some Zoom calls and getting to know each other again, because I think that we've become isolated from each other. And that's part of the hard work that's necessary to rebuild power.
As you talk and write about this, have you gotten a sense that there's a hunger from your fellow farmers and maybe those working in food processing to do this sort of thing?
Definitely. And I think, you know, COVID has been a huge wake-up call of how disrupted the supply chains got. We saw how brittle they were. You know, farmers were dumping milk, being forced to dump milk. You heard about people with pigs having to euthanize pigs because the supply chains were so brittle. So people understand that the workers in the meat plants are essential to keep those operating. We also need to protect all of our neighbors and friends and try to beat back the pandemic so that we can further open up the economy. And we need to do that together. We got to be in it together.
Sarah, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
Sarah Lloyd helps run the Nelson Dairy Farm near Wisconsin Dells. She was with us to talk about the need she sees for farmers and workers in the agricultural processing industry to organize and advocate for change, especially in the midst of the COVID pandemic. Coming up, U.S. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg died on Friday, throwing a whole new wrinkle into the November elections. We'll take a look back at Ginsburg's legacy and how her death is shaping the race for president and the U.S. Senate. First, it's the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Membership Drive. Keely Beltina joins us now. You count on the Ideas Network for interesting conversations. We count on you to help keep these discussions on the air.
That's because listener support is the largest piece of funding that makes this show and all of the others that you enjoy possible. That's why your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is so crucial.
We're off to a good start. 4 gifts already this hour toward our goal of 15. 11 more people joining in will get us there. Thank you so much if you've already given.
And if you haven't, give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Your gift funds the programs you enjoy.
In that last conversation, we heard from a Wisconsin dairy farmer who's hoping for more cooperation among small and medium-sized farmers and workers in the food processing industry to change the political landscape, keep themselves safer, she says, and make farming a little more profitable, a little less hazardous economically. It's the kind of political conversation we have here with a strong Wisconsin focus. It's the kind of conversation you can count on every day from Central Time.
Absolutely. And Central Time, along with WPR, is listener supported. That means that your donation at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 makes the many topics you tune in for every day possible. Just choose an amount that works for you and then make your gift.
If you're looking for an easy way to make a gift to Wisconsin Public Radio, become a sustaining member. Make automatic monthly contributions from your bank account or your credit card.
A lot of people give $15 a month on this plan. Some give $100. I mean, the amount is up to you. As a sustainer, you're an ongoing member of WPR, providing constant, reliable funding for your favorite radio station. Start today at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You've heard a lot of election coverage on Central Time in the past year. There's more to come before you vote on November 3rd. The extensive coverage needs resources, reporters in the field, equipment, travel, all so you can cast your ballot as an informed citizen.
Yeah, your contribution pays for subscriptions to news programs, and it allows us to follow the campaigns. So support your source for election news now. Go online to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Once in a while, you actually get more than you pay for. Wisconsin Public Radio is one place where that's true every day. Think about a gift of $2 a day to support the radio programs that you love.
Okay, it's hard to buy much for $2, but at Wisconsin Public Radio, $2 a day makes a lot of news and talk and music possible. That works out to $60 a month. You can make that gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
About a half hour left for us to hit our goal of 15 gifts during this hour of Central Time. You can help make that happen. You make Wisconsin Public Radio possible when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, Bernadette in Toma says, I love the program subjects and tune in every chance I get. Rob Ferret seems to have such a great connection with the guests. Well,
aww.
Bernadette,
thank you.
Yeah, thank you for that. That's you. And I agree with Bernadette. And if you agree with Bernadette, now is the time to go ahead and make your donation at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And you can get the brand new Wisconsin Public Radio puzzle when you give, in addition to supporting the programs you value. Ask for it with your gift of $12 a month or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And if you're not a sustainer, you can become one right now. It's easy to set up, and you just make ongoing monthly donations from your bank account or your credit card. You can do that at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to provide reliable support for the programs that you love.
You count on us for great conversations each and every day. We count on you to help pay for it. Make your gift now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and thank you. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Should Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg's potential replacement be considered before or after the November election, before or after Inauguration Day? Coming up, we'll look at the debate over the vacancy on the U.S. Supreme Court. You can join in with your thoughts at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Now it's the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Member Drive. Keely Boltina joins me now at WPR. Listener contributions are the biggest source of funding. Your gift keeps the programs you value, including Central Time, on the air. Make your gift right now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Hey, Rob. Yeah, when 11 more people join in during the next about 25 minutes, we meet our goal. And you may be thinking, where are they getting these numbers? Are they just making them up? Actually, no. These hourly goals are set up to make sure that we have the funding for the programs that you enjoy. So it's all about keeping on pace, keeping the momentum. So make your donation now at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552.
A thing I think I can safely say about you as an Ideas Network listener, you want to know what's going on, both in the news and in the culture around us. We are right there with you, exploring all the angles here on Central Time.
And we're grateful for your support. It makes all the stories that you hear on this show possible. It makes it a reality. So give now. It makes a huge difference. Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You first joined the Wisconsin Public Radio community at some point as a listener tuning in, maybe tuning in every day. After a while, it's time to join the community as a donor. Funding the great programs on WPR is a group effort.
We do this together, one gift at a time, $1 at a time. If you've never given before, start with a donation of, say, $100 or $10 a month. I mean, whatever amount is right for you. It's easy to give. Go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
This drive, donate any amount, and you could win $1,000 to buy a bike or accessories. What would you buy?
I would buy one of those tandem bike attachments. My three-year-old, he'd love it if he could just bike right behind me instead.
A brand new saddlebag? Mine is so worn out.
Don't tell my other bike, but I would definitely upgrade to something newer.
One lucky winner will receive a $1,000 gift card for Wheel and Sprocket to spend on their new bike or cycling gear. Sustainers, you're automatically entered. Find out all the details at WPR.org/drawing. You can't win if you don't enter. So make your gift of any amount right now. Here's how.
Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to make your donation in support of the programs you count on. I'm Rob Ferret here with Keely Boltina. Your support today of Wisconsin Public Radio keeps all the programs you enjoy going strong. Whether you give 10 bucks a month or 100 bucks a month, we appreciate and we count on your gift.
You might be wondering, how much should I give? That's up to you. Your contribution of any amount is turned into great programs, programs that keep you informed and entertained all year long.
Make your gift right now in the amount that's right for you at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And when you do that, you play a huge part in funding the programs you count on every day.
Your gift right now says, I value this program. I want more of it. It makes me think. It makes me laugh. You fill in the blank about how you feel when you hear this show. Those are powerful feelings, and you make a powerful statement when you support what you value, what you believe in. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We got off to a great start on Friday, the first day of this membership drive. We want to keep up that momentum now on Central Time. You can do that when you give now. Help us hit our goal of 15 gifts this hour. 11 more people, last I checked, needed to join in, so we need to pick up the pace here. You make Wisconsin Public Radio possible when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And now's a good time, because as an added bonus for supporting these programs you love, you could win $1,000 to spend on bikes and cycling gear at Wheel and Sprocket. So if you're wondering, when should I give? The answer is now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Sustainers, those of you making ongoing monthly gifts, you're automatically entered.
We heard from Yancey in Milton. Yancey says, Central Time brings us such great shows day after day after day. I realized, Yancey says, I really needed to support this. Thank you so much, Yancey, for giving and for getting it. You count on us day after day after day, and I'm so glad to be there with you. And you understand that we count on you to help pay for it all. Thank you so much for giving. How about you? You can join in at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Looks like we'll know by the end of the week who President Trump is nominating to fill the seat held by U.S. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. She died on Friday at the age of 87. President Trump called into Fox News this morning and was asked about the timeline for Ginsburg's replacement.
We want to pay respect. We will have probably services on Thursday or Friday, as I understand it. I think, in all due respect, we should wait till the services are over for Justice Ginsburg. And so we're looking probably at Friday or maybe Saturday.
Ginsburg's death came 46 days before Election Day. Friday evening, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell vowed to move forward on the confirmation process. Democrats, even a couple of Republican senators, say it should be put on hold until after the elections. We want to know what you think at 800-642-1234. Should President Trump and the GOP Senate work quickly to get a new justice confirmed? Or is this a job for the next president and Senate, whoever they may be? How would you describe Ruth Bader Ginsburg's legacy? What questions do you have about Supreme Court nominations? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Charlie Jacobs is a professor of public law, judicial process, and American politics at St. Norbert College in De Pere. Charlie, good to have you back with us.
Glad to be here.
Well, Charlie, first of all, your reaction to the passing of Justice Ginsburg?
I mean, it's going to leave a hole in the court in many ways. I mean, she brought a breadth of experience, both from her personal life and some of the private practice that she did, but then all the years that she has spent on courts at the federal level. I mean, she was nominated to the circuit court at the District of Columbia in 1980. Jimmy Carter nominated her. And so, you know, she served 40 years at the federal level. And, you know, she brought a unique voice, in particular for equal rights for women. And again, that was from her private practice, but also from her legal experience on the bench. So it's going to be interesting whether or not others on the bench take up that slack and sort of take up her clarion call for those kinds of rights, or whether her replacement will do that for her.
Can you talk a little more about what you think she'll be most remembered for?
It's interesting that I think for me, because I teach constitutional law to my students, you know, she had such a large impact on shaping the way the American courts today think about the equality of women. Many don't know that out of law school, one of her first important pieces of work that she did was with the ACLU. And she helped to shape the doctrine that is used by the court now and how it evaluates whether or not women are treated unequally under law. And so these cases from the early 1970s, in particular one called Craig v. Boren, where we see the court develop this very particular test to evaluate whether or not the law is treating women in a disadvantageous way. I mean, her fingerprints are just all over that doctrine, and in several cases that preceded that. And of course, she pursued that much more on the court. I mean, I think sometimes when we think about women's issues, we often get stuck thinking about abortion, which of course is not an unimportant argument to have. But certainly when we think about something like the Lilly Ledbetter Act, which is about pay disparities and the way in which women could bring suit if they thought that they were being treated differently by employers. I mean, that too, that federal act was promoted in large part because of a dissent that she wrote in a case about the lack of opportunity women had to bring lawsuits of that type. Look, she had a broad career, and she does have a lot of impact in a lot of areas, but I think that is one that's central to her legacy.
Talking to Charlie Jacobs from St. Norbert College in De Pere, looking at the passing of Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and now we turn to some of the politics that will follow. Let's start with a caller. Marcus is with us in Milwaukee. Marcus, hi.
Good afternoon. So I think that if we're going to have one set of rules that applies equally and fairly to everyone, I kind of feel like we should not fill the Supreme Court position until after the election, because that was the precedent that was just established with the last go-around of a vacancy.
Thanks for the call, Marcus. And there it is, Charlie. Marcus diving right into the question of when this should go forward, and should the standard established by Republicans in 2016, 8 months before an election, apply again this time, a month and a half out from an election?
I mean, obviously, from a consistency point of view, you would expect the Republicans, who made a very vocal case to be able to fill the vacancy created by the death of Antonin Scalia, you would expect that they would pump the brakes and we wouldn't see them rushing headlong into this, especially since we're 6 weeks out from an election. And the case that they made previously was, you know, the people should be speaking on this issue by whom they elect. But also remember that Article 3 of the Constitution leaves a lot of autonomy to the Congress to decide how they're going to manage the court, how many members, what their qualifications are, and how they're going to vet them to see whether or not they're appropriate for the bench. So quite honestly, if the Republicans decide to change their mind, there's nothing impeding them except for the reaction of the public and whether or not they're going to vote Republicans back in office in the Senate to keep changing their mind like this. So, I mean, Marcus wants consistency, and I think that makes sense, but there's no roadblock here. And so if this is what administration and the Republicans in the Senate want to try to pursue, it is sort of within their constitutional priorities to do that.
Is there an electoral penalty to pay, Charlie, especially with somebody like Senator Lindsey Graham, who said as late as October of 2018, if an opening comes in the last year of President Trump's term, the primary process has started, we'll wait to the next election. And Graham had previously said, use my words against me back in 2016. He's up for election. can these words effectively be used against a candidate in a situation like this?
I mean, the polls right now have him, you know, in a state where he should win. I mean, I think he's facing one of the, you know, best challenges he's had in a while, and that may motivate individuals. But remember, it is a reddish state, South Carolina, and as a result, people might be very happy that he changes his mind and confirms another justice to the court and doesn't mind that inconsistency, because the outcome, a court that tends conservative and might produce doctrine that is accepted by voters of this type, is actually welcomed. And so it might actually boost his chances for reelection if he decides to go down this path. I think it depends on the state. I think it depends upon whether or not a challenger is close to an individual. I mean, someone like Susan Collins, she's kind of in a pickle here because she is running for her life. And so I'm not sure whether or not Mitch McConnell is going to get her vote, because she has been roundly criticized by the way that she has behaved over the last two nominations to the court. And this one may seal her fate if she decides to vote with McConnell and with Trump for a new nominee to the bench.
Let's bring on another caller at 800-642-1234. Tom joins us in La Crosse. Tom, hi. Oop, do we have you, Tom? I'm saying no. Let's try Jamie with us in Portage then. Jamie, hi.
Hello. You guys have hit on most everything that I was going to say already, but I actually had two other quick things. First, one of the conversations I heard over the weekend was court reform, and I had a conversation with a former teacher of mine, and she said that we should limit justices to 18 years or to the age of 65, whichever comes first. And the second thing is, if the person could comment on her dissenting opinions and how important those have been and how important they will be in the future. Thank you.
Thanks, Jamie. Two big questions there. Let's start with this idea, and we've talked to guests who have a movement to try to have that. There are different term limits suggested 13 or 18 years. But that idea, Charlie, that we have kind of this absurd situation where if I'm a Supreme Court justice, I might want to stay. I can't retire if I'm worried about the future makeup of the court.
I mean, this is something that would take a constitutional amendment, and constitutional amendments are challenging, and they are particularly challenging in our polarized political world of the moment. Remember that it takes 2/3 of each chamber of Congress and then 3/4 of the states to ratify any amendment to the Constitution. And of course, depending on who's in power at any given moment is going to create a different ox getting gored. And because of that, you almost never get consensus for what might be perceived by most of the public as a rational change that would help to diffuse some of the controversies that erupt at times like this. And so it would take a monumental effort by the public to do this, to really put pressure on elected officials, because Democrats aren't going to want to do it when they have the power to nominate, and neither Republicans when they have the power. The other issue, one he mentioned about automatic retirement by 65, and think about somebody like Ginsburg. She was 60 when she was nominated to the court. That gives her half of a decade to influence the law and to add her voice, you know, to the conversation about what doctrine is going to be over time. So, you know, we might be placing people who haven't seasoned over time and become eminently qualified for the high court. I mean, we have had some very good justices, including some that are sitting on the bench right now, who are well over the age of 65, who can still contribute their intellectual prowess to those kinds of decisions. You know, and there are issues with this. So issues that I think we'd have to the process of amending the Constitution.
Jamie also asked about your thoughts on Justice Ginsburg's dissents and how influential they might be.
I mean, dissents are often sort of ticking time bombs, because they exist as sort of a written justification for alternative approaches to understanding the law and alternatives to decisions by majorities, even significant majorities, you know, 7 or 8 justices on the bench. And I think one of the most famous, of course, is from Plessy versus Ferguson. And in that case, you know, they were making an argument for a colorblind constitution that pivoted in 1954 in Brown versus Board of Education and became the law of the land. That's what's going to be the legacy of her dissenting opinions. She was forceful. She pulled no punches. She didn't really care who she was going to offend among her colleagues, because She considered the battle over the law segmented from the friendship she had. So she pulled no punches and she did not care what people thought about her opinions. And so she has got this sort of well of legal interpretation that's going to serve generations in the future.
Briefly, as we wrap up, Charlie, people are suggesting this shakes up the election campaign. Does it? I mean, people who are thinking about the Supreme Court were already thinking about it. Does this emerge as a bigger issue now? Does it crowd out COVID-19 and the other big issues, the long list of big issues that are already out there?
I mean, I think it may, and I think it depends on what exactly the Trump administration decides to do. I mean, there is a strategic case to be made to not make the nomination because that will drive turnout from the base. His argument being, well, if I'm handcuffed and I can't make the nomination until after I'm reelected, then reelect me. I mean, if he's got some soft spots among his base and they're not going to show up and vote for him, this may juice the process in a way where he actually gets a high turnout that gets him over the edge in battleground states like Wisconsin.
Charlie, thanks a lot for joining us again today.
My pleasure. Thanks very much.
Charlie Jacobs is a professor of public law, judicial process, and American politics at St. Norbert College. We talked about the legacy of U.S. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg and the debate over her potential successor. We'll talk about that more in the weeks to come. Lots of callers who didn't get on, but we'll give you more shots at that for sure. And coming up today at 6, get more on this topic, 1A+. We'll look at the two big questions gripping Washington. Does President Trump have the support he needs to confirm a new justice? And who's it going to be? It's today at 6 here on the Ideas Network. Now it's the Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Member Drive. Keely Boltina joins me. Your gift right now is super important. That's because we count on contributions from people like you to make it all possible. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We've got 5 minutes left this hour. We're looking for 9 more people to join in. The math actually works okay because it only takes a few minutes of your time and you don't have to be all 9. You just have to be one person. Make your gift to support the programs you enjoy, like Central Time, every day.
Make your gift now. We just had a conversation, the first, I'm guessing, of many, about what happens next in the U.S. Supreme Court, how it fits into the political landscape. We talk about these kind of questions a lot here on Central Time across the Ideas Network, and you get a chance to join in as well. These are the kind of conversations you can count on from Central Time.
WPR is listener supported, so that means your donation at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 makes the topics you tune in for every day possible. So choose an amount that works for you, then make your gift.
Challenge yourself with the new WPR puzzle. This circular puzzle comes together to reveal Wisconsin's state symbols in the night sky. Enjoy hours of fun with your WPR puzzle. It's yours with a gift of $12 a month or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You have a lot of bills in your monthly budget that are out of your control.
Certainly my education, but hopefully it's going to be worth it and going towards a good cause.
Rent, for sure.
Every time I turn around, my automobile insurance is increasing.
Unlike the other things you pay for, you're always in control of your sustaining membership. During this pledge drive, we ask our sustainers to consider an increase to your monthly gift. How about $5 a month? It'll go a long way to pay for the WPR programs you rely on day in and day out. Thank you for your ongoing support.
Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Rob Ferret here with Keely Boltina. Listener support is the biggest source of funding for WPR programs you rely on. That's why your support during this fall member drive is so important. Maybe your gift is $10 a month or $100 a month. Whatever amount you choose is the right amount to give.
Wisconsin Public Radio listeners become Wisconsin Public Radio contributors for a wide variety of reasons. Giving to WPR is just one way to make a difference, to help your local community.
Your contribution today not only pays for the programs you listen to, it also gives others the chance to discover Wisconsin Public Radio. Make that gift now, $100 or $10 a month, whatever amount is right for you at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And certainly everyone should make the gift that works for them. And so for you, that might be a gift of $1 or $200 a month.
whatever amount works for you is the right amount to give, and it really does make a difference. Every gift gets added to all the other gifts. It all comes together to make the Ideas Network possible. Think about all the things you've learned on the Ideas Network. Think of all the entertainment you've gotten, weekdays and weekends alike. Think of the conversations you've been able to listen to, and maybe the conversations that it started with your friends. Talk about what you heard that day. And then make a gift. You make it possible when you give. Take just a few minutes. You can do it online at WPR.org. Or get on the phone. Again, it's just a few minute long process, and give at 888-202-2552. Just a few more minutes to give this hour. Help us hit this goal, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Keely, put them over the top here.
Yeah, we have just 1 minute left, but we can do it. We're looking for five more people to join in, and then we will meet our goal. Remember, WPR is listener-powered. That's why your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is so important.
Ask for the Wisconsin Public Radio Puzzle when you give $12 a month or more. Lucy in Jefferson says, Central Time's one of my favorite daily shows because I know I can count on it to bring me deep coverage of some of the day's most important stories. Forrest in Dailyville says, WPR consistently outstrips other sources of news and info. Thank you, both of you, for giving. How about you join them? Think about why you appreciate the Ideas Network. Then give at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Yeah, and there are many ways to give. You can give a one-time donation. You can also become a sustaining member. That means that we can rely on your support month in and month out. If you're a sustaining member making ongoing monthly gifts, thank you. It's so important. Make today you increase your support for WPR by $5 or $10 a month or whatever amount you choose. You can do that at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Another one just came in. We can hit our goal. We'll keep going through the news. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you so much.